Enneagram Enthusiast. This is your host, Leslie Root, and I have my favorite sexual therapist, Lindsay Frazier, here today, and she's going to talk all about what she does with her clients and all the cool information she has about sexuality and the Enneagram. And I think you're going to tell us a little bit about the model you work with too, right?
Yes. So the base model that I work with in therapy is Gina Ogden's model, which is the 4D model. And I have found her model to be absolutely wonderful. So one of the things that most of us do around sexuality is we focus on the physicality. And what Gina's model brings in is that there's actually four quadrants that affect and influence how we feel about sex. So it's not only physicality, but it's also our emotional world, our mental world, as well as our spiritual world, which I actually like to use the word more connection with other and connection with self with the spiritual, because I find sometimes people get stuck on that and they think about a religious component with that, but it's not actually a religious component, though it might be for some if you are looking for connection to God through sex.
Right, so she kind of does, has a wheel, right?
She has a wheel, yep. And one of the interesting things about this wheel is it's going to focus on the shadow and the light of each quadrant. Ooh. So each quadrant has light and each quadrant has shadow, and that's going to influence your ability to have connective sexuality. And in the center is actually the integration or disintegration of all of those four together. Yes. So she uses the center as the place that when everything is working well, it's kind of like, it's ecstasy, kind of that like holistic, you know, she says, oh God, oh God, oh God. We say, oh God, for a reason. And she used to say this all the time. Unfortunately, she did pass away, about 2 years ago now. But that was her, it's our oh God moments that happen in integration.
Oh my gosh, right? So I love that, that the model you work with really considers all these different areas, right? The body, the mind, the heart, and our spirit, right? Or our oneness.
And our oneness.
Our connectedness. So cool. And you've combined this with the Enneagram.
I have, yes. You're gonna see that, you know, certain numbers might struggle or succeed in different parts of these quadrants as well.
Wow, I bet. I this fascinates me, Lindsay, because I'm like, wow, I wonder what you've seen with sexuality and what types seem to maybe get stuck in which quadrants. And I make up that you must see certain types that get stuck in certain quadrants.
I do, definitely. So one number that kind of comes to mind to me is sixes. So if we think of sixes, where they might get stuck sometimes, might be in that emotional, and also potentially mental, right? So if we think about, like, you know, sixes can have a tendency towards maybe anxiety, kind of wanting to know, you know, what's going to happen, how are things going to be secure in my life? And so what I'll see sometimes is that anxiety might hinder their ability to connect with the other. They also can be, not always, but can be a little bit more like, here's how I want things to happen, this is how it needs to be, and focus more on like, so to be a good wife, I should be having sex. And so we'll schedule sex on Wednesday night. I will do the activity or the behavior because that's what you do. But it might hinder their ability to be in like the more spiritual or even the physical experience of pleasure that's happening because they're anxious about keeping that connection to the partner. And so in their mental mind, they're saying, this is what I need to do to continue to have that happen. So that would be one example of where I might see more shadow play out for my sixes in particular. And I know last time you guys said we need some more six in here.
Yes.
So I thought I would start with my sixes today.
Yes. Gosh, what you say about the sixes, it makes so much sense that when you think about this four-part model, this four-part wheel, that six is going to be heavy in that mental and heavy in not a good way sometimes, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. What do you notice? So you said scheduling for them. So it's almost like present tense mental blockage,
like getting themselves sort of like, I need to get myself in that place to be sexual.
Okay.
And so some of my clients that I've seen as far as sixes, like, okay, like this is how, like, it can be also rigidity around sexual behaviors. Like, these are the sexual behaviors that I know, these are the sexual behaviors that are okay for me. And so some difficulty again, I'm generalizing here, some difficulty like just being able to let go and enjoy the experience for what it is.
Totally, totally. I could see where sixes would really almost need maybe a process to be able to really ground themselves and start to connect head, heart, and spiritual.
I find for sixes things that can be helpful, like mindfulness, right? Ooh. So like our body scan meditation. So like really paying attention to how to be more present in the moment, feeling my body, knowing how things feel, so that when I'm in the sexual experience itself, like which honestly, this is actually good for everybody.
Yes.
But
not just sixes.
Not just sixes. But I think that ability to like have some, you know, practice of mindfulness or meditation, being more present is going to be huge, huge for sixes. Good for everybody, huge for sixes.
So true. So sixes can get a little stuck then in that mental quadrant. What have you found they're maybe strong with? What have you seen them do quite well with sixes? Anything you've seen be their superpower in sexuality?
I think if they have the capacity to be able to get out of their head and be in the experience, that's where they can be successful.
Oh, totally. And when I think about sixes, I think they're quite dedicated. So I think once they find what works for them, that they have that grit to keep doing it, to keep the practice going.
They are good at knowing what sexual behaviors work for them. They're gonna know like this works, this works, this works. And I do see them being pretty good at asking for that, where I think some other numbers might hesitate or have a harder time asking for what they need or want. I do feel like sixes know what behaviors work. They can be a little rigid within that, but they definitely know, and they're gonna tell their partner like, this is what works, this is what doesn't work. And so I think having that as like a superpower or a strength is huge, because they're gonna go for like that security that they know like this works.
That's interesting that you said security. I'm like, wow, I bet security plays a big piece in them being able to access those high sides of the different quadrants.
Yeah, definitely. If they feel more secure, they can move into more adventure, more excitement, and I think that the security and connection to the partner will be huge for them to be able to have more of that spiritual or kind of kinky fun sex.
Totally. Totally. What have you noticed with Enneagram 2, Lindsay? What have you noticed about these quadrants? And let's say the quadrants again, just so our listeners can keep in mind, like, hey, what are these quadrants on this wheel?
So the quadrants again are going to be that physical, the emotional, the spiritual, and the mental.
Yes. What have you noticed with Enneagram 2s in those four categories?
Twos are pretty emotionally in tune with what their partner needs or wants or desires. So I feel like one of the things that twos can do really well is, I'm going to know what you like and I'm going to know how to provide it. They can quite be seductive, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
In a good way and in a bad way.
Oh.
In the sense of like, you know, if I know this is how I can be, if you want to use helpful, right? In the sense we're talking about twos, it's like, I know this is what you like. I've been paying attention. I know what sexual behaviors to do for you and how to please you and go there with you. And I think that can be a huge benefit when they're in a good place. When they're not in a good place, it could be a way of trying to get things that they want.
Ooh, the manipulation.
The manipulation. But it's again, it's like when you're healthy versus unhealthy, right?
Wow.
Because it can be a really healthy thing, like, I know what you like and we're close and connected and I just want to please you and I want to give you what it is that'll help for that. Tends to be more in the physical realm, like, here's the sexual behaviors that I know that you like, but I think also emotionally they can be there and give that to you because they know that's what you need.
So they're almost like this ultimate lover, but wow, they can sting you.
They can if their needs are not being met. And as we know, sometimes twos can struggle with like, I'm going to give you what you need, but not necessarily always ask for what they need. And so like, it can be the, like, I gave you this really, really hot sexual experience. And now what about me? Where's mine? Right. And again, I don't think it's often intentional. It's that they hope that you'll see them and know what they need or want. But one of the things we always do in therapy is like, nobody can read your mind. And you have to be able to ask for what you need and want to receive it. Though two's pretty good at reading other people's minds.
I know. I was just like, I bet they just want the reciprocity of like, can't you just know what I need? Yeah. And they're like, no, unless you're with the two.
or maybe a nine. Sometimes nines can do that too. But but your other Enneagram numbers, you know, they're not going to be so great at reading minds.
Okay.
And we shouldn't expect anybody to read our mind. Even those numbers that can do it well, sometimes they can get it wrong.
Yeah, totally. So the twos, the seductive two. Seductive in good ways and seductive in not great ways.
It's both.
It's yeah. a both and.
It's a both and.
What have you noticed with ones, Lindsay?
Well, ones can be, because there are perfectionists, there's always a right and a wrong way to do things. And I think that they can sometimes get really focused in the mental quadrant of like, okay, what's the right way to have sex?
Yeah.
And how do I set that up, right? Like, okay, if I do A, B, C, D, E, F, G behavior, it's going to be a mind-blowing, rocking sexual experience. So they look for perfection in sex.
Yeah.
The interesting things with ones, though, that is that what I will see sometimes for ones around sexuality is like they will go to that growth point, that seven, and it's like they can just let go.
Yeah.
They can just be in the moment and they can just experience sex. So sometimes what I will see with ones is they might struggle in other aspects of their life, but sexuality or sex or sexual connection like might be the one place that they are able to just like let it go.
Right.
And really just fully experience what's happening and occurring and being present and having that more connective sexual experience. And so it's interesting to me. I think it's beautiful when ones have this because they can be so regimented in other aspects of their life and that ability to just like, I'm gonna let go.
Yeah.
And I'm going to experience and I'm just going to be, you know, one of the things I said is like, you know, for sex to work well, oftentimes it is about just being present in the moments. The best sexual experiences happen when we do that.
Oh my gosh, totally. So for ones to really have that ability to let go of all expectation, it has to be super freeing.
Yeah. And again, they can sometimes struggle to actually get to the sexual experience.
Yeah.
But I do see a lot of them, like once they do and they get out of like, what's the right way to have sex? I think it's one of their superpowers, to be honest, about how they can just let go and just be present.
Would you see that as in the physical quadrant, or how do you conceptualize that?
It's kind of all of it,
is
right?
It? Okay.
It's like, if I let go and I'm in a mental space where I'm just going to experience this, I'm emotionally excited or free or connected. And then because of that, I'm enjoying the physical experience that I'm having, and I have that deeper connection to the partner through sex. So it's really almost that center, right? It's like that going to the center is what that seven, the one can do when they go to the growth point seven. Sevens can do it too.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Have you found that they seem to get stuck in any quadrant or kind of equally stuck in different quadrants?
They're going to get stuck more often than not in the mental.
In the mental, mm-hmm. Okay.
That's going to be sort of, you're going to see more shadow play out there. They're going to struggle a little bit more because there's this kind of internal struggle, like, is this right? Is this wrong? Mm-hmm. They could get bogged down in day-to-day life stuff that's happening, so have a harder time, like, moving into sexuality. So if I have, you know, I think of a lot of my ones have that structure and that organization. It's like, well, is sex one of the things on the calendar for today?
Yes.
And so it can be harder for spontaneity sometimes, I think, for them, and kind of like moving into sex. So I think for ones, one of the things I will often say, and again, this is going to be good for everyone.
Yeah.
Is that in the sense of like you schedule a day for sensual, romantic, and connective experience with your partner. And so like if you it's being more planful in the sense, like, we're not gonna plan sex.
Right.
But we're gonna plan the day that I'm going to allow myself to have that capacity. So it might be, you know, maybe it's Sunday, right? Sunday is my romantic, connected, sexual day with my partner. And in that, I'm going to set up a scenario that will be more conducive to sexuality. So, you know, maybe that's laying in bed and having coffee together. Maybe that's, you know, going to a museum and looking at some art. Maybe that's just, you know, eating popcorn and laying in bed. Whatever that's going to be for you, that's going to be more conducive, quality time. And right. so you're not planning. And then the idea is that sex can happen. It doesn't have to happen, but you're creating the environment to make it more likely to happen. And I think for ones, this can be essential because then they're like, this is the plan. This is what I'm doing for today.
Right.
Versus like, where do I squeeze it in with the other things that I have?
Yeah.
And again, this idea is great for every number.
Yes.
But I do see that it's extremely helpful for more of my planful numbers. So like, I think threes would benefit from this as well, as well as ones.
That's a great point. I love that idea of just kind of having a day that we block for pleasure, right? However that comes up.
And if you noticed, I wasn't just talking about sexual pleasure.
No, I want like the massage. Yeah. I want the good food.
Well, it is sexual, but I guess it's not the sexual behaviors. Yeah.
And the sex, all of it.
I want to just lay in bed. So that's my 9 self. Bring me some food.
Bring me food in bed.
Or a coffee and a good book to read and I'll be happy.
Yeah. So true. I love that idea of, blocking time for no expectation, for comfort, for joy, for, you know, letting it all go.
Yeah, it's essential. And I think that, you know, just our culture and society too is so much go, 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 go.
Yes.
That we aren't thinking about how we schedule pleasure.
Yes.
And I'm pleasure in multiple ways, right? Like you're saying, like the massage, like to me, it's like, get me that vanilla latte.
That sounds good. I'll take that too.
Yeah.
So true. Okay, cool. Well, you kind of touched on three when we were chatting about one there. I'd love to hear your thoughts on three in the quadrants, Enneagram three. Are achiever. What do you said you notice sometimes in that mental capacity, the three sometimes can have that shadow side.
Yeah, I think that they can, again, like it's about being impressive. And so I think sometimes, you know, around sex too, you got to do it well, right? Mm.
Look a certain way.
Look a certain way. Yeah.
Be at a certain angle.
Be a certain angle. I mean, I do see sometimes that there can be, not always, again, this might be more for my women that are threes, is like focus on their body.
Yeah.
Like if my body isn't absolutely ideal. And again, other numbers will do this as well.
Right.
But I think because of how people perceive and see me being really important, it's like if I don't feel good that my body is the way that it should be, or if I, you know, so it can get more, a little bit more bogged down in that as well.
I've seen a lot of these characteristics where, in particular, threes will want to be like the perfect lover, like be really want to impress their partner and almost overcompensate, like by a lot of times, in particular with my female threes, I've seen them, they do too much. They make it too easy for their partner to not have to participate at that same level. Do you see that ever with three clients?
Yeah, I would definitely say that I do see that as well with the three clients.
It's interesting too, three on that heart triad, sometimes they are, the driver is to please the partner at times is what I found with threes as well. Have you seen that with threes?
It is about wanting to please the partner and what it is that they think they will need so that they will be desired and wanted. They do typically want to be desired and wanted and seen as attractive. Men do too that are threes.
Totally.
You know, I typically, it's interesting to me, most of my threes, you know, especially when I was in the office, but like even when I see them online right now, they're the ones that are like, fully put together.
Yes. They look good.
I'm the one
COVID.
That like has sweatpants underneath the camera. Yeah. You can't quite see them. You know, my threes are gonna have their makeup and their hair done.
Yeah.
Women more often than not.
Yeah.
Or even if they have athleisure on, they're gonna look really nice.
Yeah.
Right?
Put together.
It's put together. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting though too is like they can get a little bit like with their partner. So this is also gonna be mind or. it could be a little bit of emotion too, like frustration towards the partner. It's like if their partner isn't achieving as much as they think that they should, that they might not want to be, like, if you're not up to par where I need you to be, I might not want to be sexual with you. There's some like kind of needing the partner to be as impressive as they are. Yes. And if you're not as impressive as they are or what they perceive that they need or want, there can be some anger or frustration.
Right.
Or, what's the right word? Blocking of like physical connection which can be hard because we all struggle in life sometimes. And sometimes, you know, we or our partners aren't going to achieve as much as we want. And so sometimes I think for threes that can influence or affect the sexuality piece too for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more about their emotions
and
their mental space than it is actually even about the partner. I mean, one of the things to keep in mind with sexual desire, is nobody else creates your sexual desire. You are responsible for your own. So your partner can make that. What? Yes. What?
No. It's my partner's fault.
And so I always tell clients it's about, you know, your partner can make it better or worse depending on what works for them, but you yourself are responsible for desire. So I think about it like, you know, I had one example one time with a white pair of pants, right? Like,
ooh.
you know, when she wore a white pair of pants, he was turned on,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, let's take that. She's not turning him on by wearing those white pair of pants. He's turning himself on.
Yeah.
But those white pair, she can choose to put those white pair of pants on.
Yes.
To turn him on.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important. I feel like sometimes, like when we go back even to that three, is it's like, what's your job to impress me so that I want to be sexual with you?
Mm.
It's like, well, is it the other person's job?
Well, yeah. No, I'm just no, you're a great point, right? So you're kind of looking at like supporting that three with seeing that they are, you know, you are the master of your destiny with this. What I've seen with threes too is they do so much sometimes that their partner really sometimes isn't doing enough. So sometimes I've seen a balance issue with threes in relationships.
It's interesting because like I'm a nine.
Mm-hmm.
And so threes can like wear me out.
Can they?
Yes. I'm like, how can you do that many things in a day? Like I'm a very
yes.
very typical nine. Like if I have like I have this scheduled today, Leslie, with you. That's it. I can't have anything else scheduled today. This is my one thing that I have the capacity for. And like one of the things I will notice with threes is that they're gonna be your go-getters. They're gonna be the ones that might have 10 things planned in one day.
Totally.
They are typically, you know, they have their job, they have their side hustle, they have their, you know, volunteer work. And I'm just like, I am so exhausted as a nine. Like, how do you do that? I'm also quite jealous because I think it's really awesome how threes can do that. But it is interesting. And I think that brings in an interesting thing too. Like, right, like if a three were in relationship with a nine, like how might sexuality struggle, for instance, right?
That's a great point. Yes, that's a great point. Totally. That threes are just such... They can do a lot.
Yeah.
They can do a lot. And the partner will probably never, unless they're also a three, never match up.
That's why I'm happy I'm with a five. We can both just like do our own thing.
Right.
Like we both like being at home.
Yes.
You guys probably think we're boring. But our energy levels are very similar. And so I think that there's, you know, which we can definitely talk about again at some point, just like the interaction between different numbers. Because like for me, like having a five, because they're gonna be lower energy too and more introspective, it's perfect for me. But I would imagine us fives and nines drive some other numbers nuts.
Oh, there's gifts and not gifts for each type, right?
Yeah.
We all have our nicely worked muscles. Cool. So three. What about four? What about our deep diver? Deep feelers.
So four is really long for that spiritual, deeper connection.
Yes. Intense.
And the you know, one of their gifts is they know how to go there.
Yeah.
One of their downfalls is they expect other people to go there often. So it can be a complicated situation. And so, like, it's interesting to me because it's like, you know, when I think of fours, I think of their quadrant is more of that spiritual, that connection with self, the connection with the other. It's their shadow and it's their light. Like, they do know how to do it. One of the things I always think of with fours is that fours sometimes want their partner to, like, bring them there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they have to realize is, like, I need to be fully connected with myself before the other can even go there with me. Because with oneness and the connection or that spiritual quadrant, the only way that that really happens is as if I'm connected with myself, then the other can join me. And so sometimes I've seen with fours, it's like, I need this experience. My partner's not getting me there. You know, they need more of the longer drawn out romantic experience often. And then they can get frustrated with their partner when they can't go there. But some of it is it's their responsibility to be connected with themselves first before that can happen. And then also recognizing within that too, is it's like, those deeper connective sexual experiences are rare.
Yes.
They're not the frequent.
Yeah.
And when you're always looking or striving for that and it's not happening, I think there can be disappointment, there can be melancholy with that. And I think that there's that ability to understand that there's really three different types of sexual encounters that happen. And only one of them is gonna be that romantic, connective, spiritual connection. And even sometimes even within that one, is even when it actually fully happens, like, you both have to be in the right place at the right moment to have that, like, ecstasy. And so it's that focused on, like, you have your quickies, like, there's purpose and there's intention for that to be there.
So these are you were telling us there's three sexual experiences. So you're talking, like, the quickie, is that?
Yep, so there's three of them.
Okay.
Yep. So the three of them is like, one is the quickie, one is the romantic connective experience, and the third is your adventurous. And so, like, where I see fours is fours want it to always be that romantic connective experience. Mm-hmm. But for healthy sexual relationships, we sort of need all three.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think, like, with the quickie, I think is it's like, you know, sometimes just that physical experience and pleasure is all we have time for.
Yeah.
And just to kind of get in there, enjoy it, and get done. I think, I mean, I can completely relate to this with children. It's like, when you have kids, it's like, okay, they are, you know, they may get up in an hour. We have maybe 10 minutes. Like, what do we do? And I think that, you know, we can miss out when it's like, you can have pleasure and connection in that quickie. Of course, it's not going to be as connective as that romantic one, but so essential to keep the bonding going.
Yes.
And especially for my parents, parents have quickies.
Yes. It's like mastering 10-minute abs. It's the 10-minute quickie.
It's a 10-minute quickie, right?
So true.
It's the glue that's going to keep you together.
Yes.
So when you get to have more of the other two.
Yes.
So parents, do this.
Yes.
Especially if you have little ones like I do.
Yeah.
I know you and I have.
Yes.
We have 5- and 3-year-olds.
Yes.
So,
it has to be the length of a short video.
Short video. Exactly.
A short show.
A short show. And those of you that have infants and younger, oofta.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, hopefully they're still napping.
Hopefully.
Nap time, yes. Well, what have you noticed with fives? Because you're married to a five, and therapists, we don't see many fives in our offices, is what I kind of make up. Fives don't love therapy.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I typically see fives in therapy because somebody's dragged them in.
That might be the truth,
and
right?
And it's interesting, and I know my husband's probably going to listen to this, but, like, his wife is a therapist, and he told me, I'm never doing that. But he loves psychology books, and he loves learning the knowledge, and I think that there are different ways for fives to get what they need,
right?
On like self-study, mm-hmm. than it is actually coming in to see a therapist. I actually think he would love it if he would just try it.
I'm excited for the day that he does. Yeah.
And he's gonna be like, Lindsay, why did you say that? Because I'm sure he's gonna listen.
Oh, too funny. So with fives, I would wonder with them, like, the mental might be a high side, but also, like, a low side.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. You know, I think that fives can have a little bit more difficulty being in their emotional world. Some of it might be escaping, some of it might not be knowing how to do it or how to be there. They're very cerebral, they're very much in their head, they're very fact-based.
You know, as a therapist, we don't see that many fives in therapy is kind of what I've noticed.
Yeah, I don't typically either. I feel like oftentimes it's a partner drug them in.
Oh.
But interestingly enough, like, you know, once they sort of step foot in the therapy office, they do kind of like it.
I bet they do. Once they connect with the therapist and feel confident in their ability, I bet they're able to take feedback in a way that's really quite awesome.
Yeah, I noticed with my fives too in therapy, like, you're gonna want your kind of like data to support. Like, they're gonna ask me, like, well, where'd you get that from? And where's that information from? And I think sometimes, you know, when you've been doing therapy as long as I have, which is like over 10 years now, so I'm like, yeah, I can't remember exactly what
right.
what textbook, what information. And so oftentimes I'll just say, well, this is my general theories. I can't remember exactly who that came from, but I do know that
right.
these are pieces that I bring into my therapy.
Totally, totally. So they like to get the background. What have you noticed with the quadrants for fives? What is kind of their shadow quadrant?
So they might struggle a little bit with the emotional quadrant. Mm. You know, I feel like there's a little bit of detachment, or there can be detachment from emotion. Not always, but oftentimes I'm going to see fives more than other numbers struggle with that. And I think even within the emotions, like, when they feel incompetent, like anger and frustration, and how that will play out in their connectiveness with the partner.
Oh my gosh. What do you see sometimes with maybe the anger or the frustration for fives?
That they will, they don't feel competent, there can be projection of their anger sometimes to the partner.
Oh gosh.
And then they're, you know, that then hinders their ability to be sexually connected.
Oh, yeah.
They also oftentimes feel a lot of shame. And it's like, if I don't feel, you know, if I feel like I'm failing at my job, or if I feel like I'm failing at whatever pursuit that I'm pursuing right now, typically an intellectual pursuit, but not always, they're going to kind of get stuck in that pain point and have difficulty sort of coming out of that. And it's usually an expression of anger or frustration.
Yes. So interesting. Anything you've noticed work particularly well with fives in therapy?
Well, I think the interesting thing is with them, so you can take the mental quadrant, because they, you know, what I find with fives is, like, when they have that intellectual stimulation, that mental kind of back and forth, like, there is a lot of desire that comes created from that. So if I feel like you and I can have this intellectual pursuit and this conversation back and forth, it can easily lead into physical intimacy or connection, or just even that experience itself can be sexually charged.
Yes. Interesting, right? Do fives seem to do well with the physical quadrant, or is that kind of case by case?
I think it's case by case. I think they can be a little bit too stuck in their mind to, like, be able to be in the physical and just experience it. There can be a little bit of, like, similar to your ones that I've seen with fives, like, am I doing this right? Mm. Like, what is the right way, you know, to do or have sex? And so I have seen that a little bit. You know, interestingly enough, I do have one woman that's a five. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know if I've seen a lot. I see mostly men that are fives, but
okay.
I actually do have one woman that's a five that's seen me as well. And the same things play out for her. It isn't much different that I am seeing, like, you know, like that getting stuck in, like, you know, how to do it right. Though she can let go in sex and really just does it well. Her partner will even report that.
Oh my gosh. So she's found her groove.
She's found her groove.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Well, maybe we have time for a couple more here. Well, we already did six, so let's chat about seven. What quadrant is seven's dark side?
Oh man, probably physical.
Mm-hmm.
But they also do well in physical.
Yeah. They are such a conundrum in so many ways, because while they are a head type, I think sexuality for them is such an experience and such an adventure that they tend to excel in the experience of sex, but not always with the maybe the long-term commitment towards a partnership.
Yeah, and I think too is like some emotional detachment, like not so like even if you go move into that emotional quadrant, sometimes I can see, you know, average or unhealthy sevens, like not wanting to have that deeper, like kind of almost a wall, like I'm not gonna go and have that really deep emotional connection. Like I want to know you and hang out with you and be comfortable with you and have a, you know, some sexual pleasure and enjoyment. I think it can also be confusing for partners because they can be so free and giving in the sexual realm that other numbers might be confused that means we're also really emotionally connected, but they have a harder time or can have a harder time sort of just being with the one partner.
Yes. Yes, totally.
And confuse their other partners.
Right. Yes. So it's almost like to reach that spiritual component or that oneness for the seven means also giving of themselves, and their fear of, I think, being stuck is big. It's big. Yeah. What about eights?
Well, eights definitely know how to have pleasure.
Yeah.
And they know what they want and they know what they need.
Yep.
I think that they, you know, can sometimes be like, let's just get to it. Let's just get it over. Let's have that pleasure and be done with it.
Right.
And sometimes that then can hinder that ability for that deeper spiritual connection that can happen through sex as well. It's all about the physical, right? It's not necessarily as much, at least in the actual sexual experience, about the other three.
Right. What I've noticed for female eights is the trust piece is huge. So when I'm getting female eight couples in here, if there's been a breakdown in trust, it's like usually there's a breakdown in sexuality too. And
yeah, I definitely see that as well.
I would wonder if for eights and sixes and maybe a lot of numbers, that's true. I shouldn't limit the numbers on there.
Yeah.
And nines, what's nines shadow?
Well, now this puts myself on the spot.
Oh, right? Yes.
I'm trying to think, like, what would be the shadow of, I mean, I think, you know, nines go along to get along. And so sometimes that understanding of, like, you know, so maybe it's spiritual, you know, not being in tune with yourself, not knowing what you need or want, not having that connection with yourself because you can get overwhelmed and concerned about what everybody else around you needs and wants. It might be similar to a two, like I'm going to give you what I think that you want and need, but I'm not going to ask for what I need or want sexually. Though, I mean, I think that that's going to be more your average or unhealthy nines. I think your healthy nines will definitely know how to assert themselves and ask for what they need or want within that realm. They're very in tune to emotions. So I think that, you know, that might be one of their strengths is that they really are, you know, tend to be fairly intuitive. They're going to understand how you feel. They're going to have, which is interesting, right? Because we're talking about like nines can typically really see you. Mm-hmm. And so I think for other people, there is this like deeper connection that you feel when you're with the nine that can like lead to more sexual desire and experience within that. And I think that they do that typically pretty well.
Awesome. So that wraps up our numbers for today. And you are going to be guest hosting in our teaching program.
I am. I'm really excited.
So excited. Yes. So we get to hear more from you for those who are in the mentorship program currently. And hopefully for the next mentorship program we run, we'll be able to have you back.
I hope to be.
Yeah, you have great stuff. Well, thanks so much for being here today, Lindsay. And we will have you in again soon because sex is important. And knowing what our types need is important.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I'm always happy to talk about sex.
Awesome. Okay, bye.